Good morning, Little Saigon, Seattle. It's May the 31st, 2019, the last day of May of this wonderful month of May. But it's Friday, and holy crap, how cool is that? So even if you are one of the Schlimbye dwellers of the outer reaches of the swamp zone that Glimbus on their way to work, riding the buses, and even if your splinter is filled with blood and your blood is filled with bile, it's Friday, and you should be thankful for that bullshit. Anyways, before I get into the main topics of this podcast, I want to cover a couple quick issues. Number one, if you feel as if, on some level, that my job in life as a podcaster is to reinforce your reality, to make you feel better about stuff, I would direct you towards my many podcasts, and I think I have a playlist that deals with this specifically, but I would direct you to my more than one podcast on the subject of free speech. I don't care. I really don't give a shit if the words I say make you sad. The simplest solution to that problem is to turn the fucking podcast off. It's sad, though. That's what truly is sad. It's sad that people don't know where the off button is. And yeah, I got a podcast about that too. The off button. Here's the thing, folks. There's still an off button. There's still electricity. There is still a way to pull the plug. You don't have to listen to shit you don't like. Guess what? That is also part of freedom. The freedom to not listen to shit that pisses you off. We're not all going to agree with each other. Did you know that? Did your kindergarten teacher explain to you? Or your first grade teacher, or maybe your second grade teacher, I don't know. But did somebody in your life explain to you that we're not always going to agree with each other? We're not always going to see eye to eye, but at least we can disagree in peace. Did anybody ever explain that to you? Anyways, if you think my job in life is to reinforce your bad paradigm, at least bad from my perspective, it's not, okay? I don't want to hurt you, whoever you are. I don't want to cause you pain. But here's the deal. If you're going to be in the world, sometimes you'll get offended, maybe even most of the time. As stated in the past, while living here in Seattle, I'm offended about every 15 fucking milliseconds. And yet, I still survive. And yet, I don't somehow go crazy and harm people. So please, by all means, if you don't like what you're hearing, turn it the fuck off. If you disagree with me, send me an email. Maybe we'll have a conversation. Now that I'm trying to do more interviews, hell, maybe I'll even have you on my fucking show. But my job in life is not to make you feel better about things that might be terrible. If you're a good taxpayer, a good voter, a good follower of the War Party, which is pretty much the only party in America now, my job is not to make you feel better about that bullshit. To feel better about putting your resources in your life towards the destruction of buildings and families and setting people on fire. And that's part of war, oh, by the way. The other topic, before I get into the main topics, has to do with Willy Wonka's. I know that I say some things about Willy Wonka's that may seem distressing to you, especially if you are a Willy Wonka slave worker like myself. And whether you're an Oompa Loompa, which is what I am, or a Smurf, which is the next level up, the bottom line is, you may say, Dan, you're really harsh on Willy's. And listen, here's what I'm going to tell you. Willy's is not the worst place in the world. Just about every problem I identify at Willy Wonka's, you will find pretty much in every fucking major corporation in America, in the world today. These are not special problems to Willy Wonka's. This is why it's a hell. You know, this is why I have a video on my website where I joke about how I think I died in my sleep in 2015. And one of my forms of evidence of this is I felt like I was in hell. But I don't think, especially this last winter, that everyone here is a demon and therefore I'm not in hell. So I'm not. I'm not in hell. But I will say, stuff like this sometimes makes me feel like that way. But here's the deal, guys. Willy Wonka's is not the worst place in the world. It's a good job. I'm thankful for it. It's keeping me off the streets. And I know that sounds like a joke. It's not a joke. And also, you know, I happen to be working on a team right now. It's a small group of people, but I happen to be working on a team that isn't so bad. I mean, they don't seem so bad. And I say this knowing that a few weeks from now, maybe some fresh hell will arrive that changes things. I don't know. There's a lot of chaos at Willy Wonka's. I'll let you in on a little secret. There's a lot of chaos across corporate America today. And people who have eyes to see and ears to hear, people who are not just staring at their ironically named device all day, they actually see what's going on. So before I get into the main topics, I just wanted to say that too. You know, Willy Wonka isn't the worst place in the world. And maybe that's not the nicest thing to say about where you work, but it's literally the nicest thing that I can say about my place of work right now. It is preferable to suicide. It is preferable to homelessness. That's what I will say about Willy Wonka's. I would rather work there currently than kill myself. I would rather work there than end up in the streets. So sorry, it's not more glowing, but as you know, I suffer from borderline personality disorder, and I'm always on the borderline, baby. I'm always crossing that line, right? What the fuck? Anyways, the first topic, main topic, because in a way, those were topics, right? But the first main topic has to do with predictions of market crashes. Now, folks, about 10 years ago, and it probably was driven by Schadenfreude. And so, you know, Schadenfreude is just a fancy, I think, German word. Could be Danish. But the point is, it's a fancy word. Schadenfreude is a fancy word for an obsessive kind of desire to observe, to view the distress and the catastrophe and the tragedy in other people's lives. You know, a kind of Schadenfreude. Schadenfreude is kind of what causes rubbernecking. Schadenfreude is that desire to see if there's a body. I know, it's fucked up. Anyways, maybe it was Schadenfreude, but about 10 years ago, I started getting into the financial news. Now, I am not an investor. I am not an investor advisor. I am not a professional economist. I need to give you all that boilerplate because I don't, you know, you should not invest your money based upon anything you hear from me. All my possessions fit into three bags. That's as much advice. That's as much financial advice as you want to take from me. Three bags of shit. Anyways, about 10 years ago, I did. And then in I think it was May. I want to say May of 2010, there was the flash crash. And so, you know, the flash crash was that, I think it was like fucking 3 or 4 minutes, but it was so brief on that day. I think, I don't know if it was the Dow or the NASDAQ or both, but I think the Dow dropped like 1,000 points in like a minute or something. You know, it was just huge. It was a huge drop very quickly. And it was called the flash crash. And ever since that date, a lot of people have pinpointed the sort of like really aggressive plunge protection team action, the PPT. I think they're part of the Treasury group. I always forget the name of it, but there's a special group in the Treasury that is authorized to essentially use U.S. dollars to buy the market, to keep the market from crashing. So the plunge protection team comes by many names, but there is an organization in the government that has for a while, probably since the 1987 crash, stepped in to buy the market, and it's only gotten worse. So anyways, back then, I still believed in the tiny crocodile theory. I was a quote-unquote small government Republican still. I wasn't even a libertarian yet. Back then, I was still a small government Republican, the most impossible creature alive. Democrats and Republicans, they all love the crocodile. They do. They complain about the crocodile, but they love the crocodile. They have a very abusive relationship with each other. But the bottom line is both parties love the crocodile, and that's it, okay? But back then, 10 years ago, I still believed you could put the crocodile on a diet. And that's why I ended up, you know, becoming a libertarian. It was about 10 years ago I switched from being a Republican to a libertarian. Although I technically in 2012 went to a Republican conference, but that was mostly because I thought it was bullshit and I wanted to see what was going on. And it turned out to be a lot of bullshit. Boy, that's a whole nother topic. But yeah, back then, so the problem, I mentioned this because it's about paradigms. So I still saw the world back then in terms of, well, there was still enough freedom in America for us to make a difference. We could still put the crocodile on a diet. That's how stupid I was still, really. That's how nutty I was. I still thought that you could put the crocodile on a diet, that you could put the government on a diet. Anyways, so back then, if you would have asked me what I thought was going to happen, I would have said by 2013, 2014, I really thought there was going to be a crash, a major crash. We typically had a recession every 5 to 6 years. That was about the window for the next recession. It made sense to me that there would be some type of a crash. And here's the thing. There was a oil price recession. There was an oil price collapse in 2014, if you all recall. We entered 2014, and I think the price, I want to say West Texas Intermediate, was around, I want to say it was around or nearing $100 a barrel. And so you know, for unconventional oil right now currently, and this is a rough estimate, but for like shale oil and oil sands and all the funky drilling for oil 7 miles below the surface of the ocean, for all the conventional oil right now, you really need to have about $100 a barrel or more pricing. And this is in, of course, relative terms because, you know, the dollar could lose its value. But the point is, in current U.S. dollar terms, you probably need at least $100 a barrel for them to make ends meet. I'm just quickly mentioning that. So we did have that price collapse. And the thing is, if you ask me, you know, yeah, Dr. Copper, the price of copper is a great predictor for growth and recession. But ultimately, if we're being honest, the price of oil is. So if we're really being honest about this, the price of oil has more or less reflected the state of the economy. We have peaked out. We cannot charge more for the oil simply because no one has the money to pay for it. Okay? I've already said this. I have come to accept this as being true. We have been in a global depression, and certainly a depression in this country for at least 10 years. It's been, you know, kind of literally, figuratively papered over. Yeah, we printed a lot of money. You know, we've gone into a lot of debt to sort of make it seem like we've had growth. But the average GDP growth worldwide, I think for the last 10 years, if you average it out, I think is still either less than or barely 2%. And if you take any reasonable estimate of real inflation on a year-on-year basis for the last decade, and I'm not talking about the bullshit inflation number you get from the Federal Reserve or the Bureau of Labor, I should say the Bureau of Lies and Statistics, the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. Anyways, the real inflation number is probably closer to 5%. And so if you take the 5% and you subtract that from the 2% growth, what you have is minus 3%. Year on year, for 10 years, the world has been collapsing, folks, but we've been pretending it hasn't been. And in places like Seattle, you can kind of live in pretend land. I mean, up to a point, okay? The main thing that helps you with pretend land in Seattle is that little ironically named device you can stare at, so you don't have to look at the inconvenient homeless people. Anyways, back then, back in 2013-14, I thought the markets would crash. But here's the reality, and I kind of poo-pooed the people who said, no, it's going to keep going up. Well, here's the thing. They turned out to be right, and they turned out to be right for the right reasons, at least the ones who, you know, I think see the world the way I do now. I'm not saying you have to see the world the way I do, but the point is, I think they turned out to be right, and I've come around. I think that the market is not going to crash. Okay, it really isn't. It's just going to blow up and then shut down. It's going to blow out, essentially. I mean, I think it will just keep going up, but it won't be allowed to crash, I don't think. I think that we are in the mode of it's all manipulated. And if it were allowed to crash, it would imply that the powers that be still have control, that they can still squeeze more grease out of us. But how much can be squeezed out of Americans at this point? They're pretty much all fucking broke-ass broke. The corporations are broke-ass broke. The governments are broke-ass broke. Every fucking municipality, pretty much, is broke-ass broke. So how much more blood can be squeezed from this stone? So the point of this little topic is that, you know, when people talk about, well, the market's going to crash. Listen, I don't see the world the way I did 10 years ago. We are in a 100% manipulated economy. In many ways, we are a Stalinist wet dream. You know, Stalin was the first Soviet leader who in 1928 created basically an economic plan. It was called Gauss Plan. And then after that, it was like the five-year plan and the four-year plan. Listen, Stalin would have loved what the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government is able to do with the economy. He would have loved it. He would have loved the planning and control. That's his wet fucking dream. So anyways, yeah, I don't see the world that way. And because I don't, I now see it in terms of just more like organized crime. And if you ask yourself, what are the organized criminals doing? Well, they're trying to extract wealth. And if you ask yourself, when they're done extracting wealth, what can they do then? Well, that's a scary fucking question, folks. That's the scary question that nobody wants to ask. If we're in just another business cycle, then that's fine. But what if this is the last business cycle of a bad paradigm? Okay, a really terrible economic paradigm. The whole fucking, we're in a mixed economy. Bullshit, crocodile, pooping on your dreams paradigm. What if that's almost over? Okay? So yeah, I don't know. I don't think the markets will crash per se. I think they'll simply stop working. I think if they do crash, then that means that they believe they have one more five-year plan left in them. They think the Soviet Union of the United States of America has one more five-year plan. That's what I think. I think if they let the markets crash and if they allow a clearing price in the Dow and the NASDAQ, then that means that, yeah, the fresh hell of this bullshit reality continues for at least another 5 years. In fact, you can think of this as like upside-down Groundhog's Day or Reverse Vampire Sunday. If the markets are allowed to crash and then heal again, quote-unquote, sarcastic quotes intended, then, yeah, that really does imply that we have five more years. It's like, oh, you see the groundhog or you don't see the groundhog. That's how much more fucking winter you have. Yeah, I think if they allowed a kind of controlled collapse of the Dow and the NASDAQ by, let's say, 30 to 40%, then that implies they think that they can extract more wealth. And who knows, maybe they can. But everybody I know is strapped or living in a bullshit reality, and it's not like there's extra wealth there. Anywho, next topic. That's a depressing one. But the one thing before I leave, I want to leave you with this. If you want to understand modern contemporary economic policy, contemporary Keynesian economics in the shortest way possible, if you want to understand Federal Reserve policy and all this modern monetary theory bullshit, go to YouTube and search for Nitrous Fails. These are videos of people who take old shitty-ass cars and hook nitrous up to them. A nitrous injector. That's nitrous oxide. And basically, after they do that, it takes about 30 seconds for the engine to explode. Contemporary economic policy is like strapping nitrous to a burnt-out engine. And I'll leave you with that. Where I work at Willy Wonka's, there is a dude. And this dude, so I get to work at the same day as this other contractor dude. And I'm not going to say he's a bad dude. I don't know this dude. I think he's about 10 or 15 years older than me, which means he's really old as fuck, especially for the IT world. But he might be an okay dude. And guess what? I'm not an ageist. People can work in their 70s and 80s. That's fine. Though I think many would prefer they didn't have to. That's a separate fucking topic, folks. But there's this dude who shows up to the building at Willy Wonka's, the same building I work at. And So, you know, there's a cafeteria, and I go to the cafeteria and I order my eggs and my hash browns sometimes, and there's a shared condiment zone. And when I say condiments, I mean things like Tabasco sauce and salt and pepper, blah, blah, blah. Well, this dude will take the only decent salt and pepper, he will grab it, and he'll take it back to his fucking table. And I think to myself, and there was one day where it was so fucking obvious, like I was literally at the condiment zone, getting ready to use the salt and pepper, and this dude grabs it as my hand was moving towards it, and then he walks his little Asperger's on the spectrum walk back to his fucking table. Now here's the deal, folks. I'm not beating up on people with autism. I have a nephew with autism. I'm not beating up on people with Asperger's. But I do think there's a lot of people that will use Asperger's or BPD or some other bullshit psychological category as an excuse to be an asshole. Folks, I suffer from depression. I do not believe that is a valid excuse for being an asshole. So if I'm an asshole to you, I don't have a right to say, well, you know, I was just a real jerk and I just pooped on your day, but I suffer from depression, therefore I have no fucking responsibility. Anyways, this dude grabs a salt and pepper every day, and I mention this because he's so typical of the average fucking Willy Wonka employee, whether they're an Oompa Loompa or a Smurf. He is so typical of those people. They're just, you go to Willy Wonka's, and it's like I've said before, it's this detached reality. It's why I feel so lucky to be on the team I'm on. Like, there are so many crappy teams at Willy Wonka's and so many corporate environments where you can get on really crappy teams. I thought I was on a good team almost a year ago. It turned out to be a crappy team. And what's really funny is my phone interview told me, Dan, do not take this job. But the consulting company said they really liked you. And that turned out to be that nightmare that I think if you listen to some of my early podcasts, that nightmare at, you know, fuck it, Alaska Airlines. Fuck it, I just said it. I don't care. That fucking nightmare working for that motherfucker manager and that whole hottie, dotty, intersectional bullshit team. And being the isolated old white man and being gaslighted and then teaching one of the fucking coworkers what gaslighting was when in fact I didn't realize he was gaslighting me at the time. Like telling him what it was and, oh, what's gaslighting, Dan? Yeah, he was actually doing it. Anyways, I'm lucky to be on the team I'm on right now. I mean, the people aren't perfect, but they seem like good people. And they're not all, you know, people aren't jerks to each other all the time. And I think people want to get things done. I mean, do I feel like I'm doing my part? I don't know yet, because frankly, the work's pretty chaotic, too. It's pretty chaotic. It's just what it is. I don't know what to tell you. But yeah, you know, Mr. Salt and Pepper. I don't know what to say about Mr. Salt and Pepper. I will tell you, Mr. Salt and Pepper, that you need to understand that when you live amongst human beings, you've got to try to do the right thing even when no one's watching. Even when no one's watching, even when no one has a gun to your head, don't be a dick. That shared condiment zone, that shit's supposed to stay there, okay? If I go to a salad bar and I pick up one of the plastic inserts of salad and bring that back to my table, that would make me an asshole. If you go to a condiments bar and you grab some shit from there and put it at your table back in the corner because you're all like fucking being back there and you're gonna use your fucking on the spectrum as an excuse, fuck you, you're an asshole. And that's the truth about Willy Wonka's. And this is what makes me feel bad about myself sometimes. It attracts a lot of assholes. And it makes me, I have to like look at myself in the mirror and ask some serious fucking questions because if I'm gonna say that, then that means I could be a fucking notorious asshole as well. And I also need to mention something else before I get to the next topic. My battery's getting low. I will say this brand new recorder really chews up batteries. Probably because it's got all the extra features, right? But it really does chew up the batteries. Next topic. And it's kind of related to the last one in a way. So when I took the job I currently have, I was told it was basically kind of an OLAP job. And if you know what OLAP is, It's a category of data storage and data warehousing. It's online analytical processing. Basically, OLAP means reporting and business intelligence. It means primarily, no, it really should be exclusively read-only. The bottom line is OLAP stuff in general should be lower stress than OLTP, which is online transactional processing. These are systems like systems that deal with real data that's changing. Like if you go to Amazon, you put in an order, that would be online transactional processing. You are creating a transaction, it's getting stored in a database. That is live action. Whereas OLAP is more like after action review. It's after what's happened. You're analyzing results, you're reporting on the state of the business. The bottom line is OLTP is how you make the money. So that always has to be up. OLAP, you need it to be up, but it doesn't have to be up all the time. So when I took this job, I was under the impression, and they told me explicitly, like this is an 8-to-5 SLA service level agreement. If it's outside of 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., don't worry about it. And I'm not going to beat up on my managers because maybe from their perspective, they were being honest. But it turned out that this is not that. This has actually come close to being almost a 24/7 shop, which is but basically for reporting. Now, do I think the reporting that's being done is important? Yes. I mean, the reporting I work on that I'm connected to, the ETL I'm connected to, deals with computer security. That's as much as I can say. And computer security is important. But I would argue the computer security is also more important than the reporting. And this is where things get weird. I think I've mentioned in previous podcasts that Willy Wonka's, there's a period of time at the beginning of every month called Scorecard. And I don't think it's special to Willy Wonka. I think if you go to any contemporary corporation, you'll find the same bullshit. It's mainly with publicly traded companies. Because again, this is also related to the financialization bullshit and the kind of Stalinist bullshit. Needless to say, because of the way the market works right now, they kind of want a cycle of reporting that has too quick a tempo. And it's actually damaging businesses. There is such a thing as reporting too often, okay? And that process can actually introduce information that in reality becomes noise. And so it becomes a noisy process. So here's this noisy process that consumes lots of resources every month. So yeah, this job that I took it ostensibly as a vanilla kind of reporting job with an 8-to-5 SLA. And what I've come to realize is that even though it's still technically reporting, it is treated like, at least internally, almost like OLTP. And it, you know, if I see managers exchanging emails at 2 a.m. as if they never sleep, then it's hard for me to interpret this any differently, you know? Now, that being said, like I said, I like my team. So if any Willy Wonka person's listening and is also on my team, I love you guys. You guys are awesome, and I don't want to lose this job. I'm simply being honest. And as Deming once said, you know, the one thing the employees should not leave at the door is their brain. You know, if you ever heard of Deming and the miracle of the Japanese total quality revolution, Deming is very much responsible for that. So don't leave your brain at the door is good philosophy for a well-run business. But for modern corporations, they would prefer you leave most of your brain at the door and have the rest of it stare at your smart device. Anywho, that's enough of that topic, but I don't know why. I went off on that because it's just, this job has been good in some ways. It's also been bad in others, and it's the way it is. And it's like everyone has this. It's like I interact with somebody in Vegas, and he has a job. And I don't think he loves his job, but it's a fucking job. What do? Do you not work? If you're not rich, and I'm not rich, not working means pretty much social death, and then probably shortly thereafter, physical death. I mean, really, if you don't have a job now, if you lose your apartment and you're not a protected class, and you guess what? The old white man, I'm gonna lay in a little fucking secret, we're not protected, people. If we end up dying in the streets, and if you turn your eyes from your fucking smart device, you might see it. Yeah, we end up dying there too, amongst every other ethnicity. but we are definitely not protected. So if I lose my job and I can't depend upon a family member to help me, I end up in the streets. And frankly, I see how people live there. I think I'd rather be dead. I'm just sorry. I have to admit that. If I had a choice between being homeless or dead, it's a tough choice. It's kind of like going back to Seattle, the choice between killing myself or moving to Seattle. It's the same thing with homelessness. It's a dread. It might be okay to be homeless, but it seems like it could be quite terrible based upon what I've seen. So yeah, this job is this job, and I guess I feel like it was a little deceptive when they hired me. But that's also the world now, people. It's mostly lies and bullshit. And how can you expect it not to infect everybody? Next topic. And maybe the last topic, because I don't know how much time. This battery, I'm going to have to get some more batteries for this thing. Maybe a power supply. I don't know. This might be the last topic for this podcast because of the battery situation. But, so I take the bus to work, and I don't have a smart device, an ironically named device. I don't have one. I actually will just sit. Sometimes I'll pray quietly without talking in my head. Sometimes I'll just sit and meditate. Sometimes I'll just sit and daydream. And I will see billboards. And on my way to work this last week or so, I've seen a lot of these billboards talking about an Apollo exhibit at some museum. And I think it's at Boeing Aerospace Museum. I think they have an Apollo moon mission exhibit. And so if you don't know, the Apollo missions were the missions of the late 60s, early 70s to the moon. And some other side missions, but that was the main thing. And there have been a lot of these billboards, like talking about, oh, did you know they had to go through customs? Ha ha ha. And this guy brought salmon to the moon. and it's like these little cute things about they went to the moon and they brought some salmon salad or they went there and they did something crazy funny. Ha ha ha. But frankly speaking, it looks a lot like an old ex-girlfriend trying to insinuate herself back into your life. It's like, why are you doing this to me? Are you that fucking, how can I put this? Are you that unsettled? Are you that unsure of yourself that you need to do this? You know, you need to broadcast this pointless, you know, quote unquote trivia about what happened on the way to the moon if we went there. And that's the thing. I don't know if we went to the moon or not. They tell me we did, but I also know the government lies, or I should say the crocodile lies. So the crocodile, and also, here's another thing about the crocodile. The crocodile lies, and the crocodile has lots and lots and lots of delusions of grandeur. And if you think about delusions of grandeur, going to the moon, there's fucking nothing more delusional than that bullshit. So yeah, I don't know if we went to the moon, but I do know the crocodile lies, and I also know the crocodile has delusions. And just as I've said before, if you haven't listened to me before, when I say crocodile, just put the word government into your head. It's just, I like the word crocodile. It's the way I deal with it conceptually. Yeah, so there have been all these frickin' weird-ass billboards touting how, you know, some type of weird trivia happened. And it does seem desperate to me. Like, this is some ex-girlfriend wanting to get back together. Listen, leave me the fuck alone, NASA. Leave me alone with your bullshit. I don't believe a fucking word you say. I think you were founded by Nazis and Satanists, and I think that Nazis and Satanists still run NASA. So take your bullshit to Club 33 at Disney World. And since the battery hasn't pooped out, I'm going to try to go to another topic. Oh, yeah, so this next topic is a little weird, and I think I've talked about it before. I don't know. It's a weird topic. So you guys know, even when I was kind of an atheist, I should say kind of an atheist because to this day, as a Christian, I don't know if I was an atheist or I simply hated God. I think a lot of atheists really aren't atheists. They simply hate God. There's something that they believe God did to them. In all likelihood, it was a person that did it to them, and so they blame God for it. So, but even when I was an atheist, I was open-minded. There was a project, and I believe it was run out of Princeton, but it might not have been, but it was associated with Princeton. But there was a project many years ago where they placed these devices around the planet, and these devices were essentially on a network. They were connected to each other, and these devices generated random numbers naturally. There are different ways of generating random numbers. When your computer generates a random number, it basically does it with a pseudo function, a function that generates a pseudo random number. But the point is, there's that way to do it mathematically. There's also, with respect to randomness, you can use things like natural atomic decay. Like natural atomic decay and stuff like that with an isotope can also be used to generate random numbers. Okay. Well, I think they had a natural random generator, and they placed these devices around the world, and they correlated their behaviors, because every once in a while, these devices would become non-random, which means that they would sync up with each other. And what they found, and it was really weird, is that these non-random events roughly correlated with real-world events. So I'm mentioning this because I don't know if this really happened. I mean, honestly, this is a story I heard about on Coast to Coast AM. And so you know, if you've never listened to Coast AM, you know, Art Bell or George Norrie, you don't really understand what I'm talking about. But basically, there's a lot of shit that has been on Coast to Coast AM the last 30 years or more that you kind of have to think about. You have to. You shouldn't just accept it. You know, it might. I'm not saying it's bullshit, but it's a pretty weird show. A lot of very fringe stuff gets discussed on Coast to Coast. And so I had this thought the other day. And the thought was simply this. What if an event can be so traumatic, so horrible, so monstrous, so scary, that when it occurs, it actually sends ripples through time, backwards and forwards, which means that if we were 5 years away from something really terrible, there are a lot of people who might be sensitive to this who can start feeling it. Maybe not everybody, but it could be the human equivalent of like dogs barking before an earthquake. Now, of course, I know this sounds crazy, and I'm okay with it. I mean, this is really just a conjecture, but I've thought in recent years that it's felt like a noise in the distance has been getting louder. Like maybe 20 years ago, it was very, very faint. Like I could hear it in the distance, but it wasn't loud enough yet for it to be properly understood. But then about 10 years ago, I'll be blunt, the noise became obvious. It wasn't thunderous yet, but it became obvious. There was something in the distance, something in the future. And now, today, 2019, it seems like I hear screams in the distance. And I don't mean the screams of homeless people in the night. That's a normal occurrence in Little Saigon. I mean, the screams of many, many souls being harvested, being taken. And I know this is horrible, because nobody wants to hear stuff like this. Why would you? I mean, really, people want to be told everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be fine. In fact, they want to tune out the reality that they're contributing to. You know, I was talking to a person at work, and this person had mentioned that he didn't really like it when people, you know, like people would die in movies, especially if it wasn't necessary. And it made me think about something that James Howard Kunstler had said in the past, that most Americans had lost touch with the concept of tragedy. Well, that's true. But what's really terrible is that a lot of these Americans who don't want to know about the death, they gladly pay their taxes, and they gladly go to the voting booth, and they gladly support the war party, which goes around the world blowing the fuck out of people and murdering people and toppling governments and spying on us. But then they don't want to have, you know, anything too offensive in their movie. This is very typical, folks. This is the brainwashed, upside-down thinkery of your average smart device American. okay? They contribute to a hell that they don't want to have to see. And frankly, the powers that be deliver them that pseudo-reality through the smart device. They don't have to look at the damage they're causing. They can plug into their VR phone. That's the thing, folks. So yeah, I do feel like there's this thing in the distance, and I wonder sometimes, can some event be so tragic, so horrible, so huge, that people can sense it coming? Like, were there people in the 1930s, and specifically were there Jewish people in the 30s in Germany, who had an absolute sense of what was coming? Like, they knew, they could hear in the distance the screams. Well, the thing is, I feel as if some days I can hear the screams too, but that could also be crazy. This is the thing, folks. When it comes to our impressions of the world, when it comes to our experiences, it's okay to be honest about them, but it's also important for us to be critical. Like, you just can't say, I feel a certain way, and therefore it must be true. Listen, we should not discount emotional reasoning, okay? With all due respect to Ayn Rand and Jordan Peterson, but mainly Ayn Rand, emotional reasoning's fucking important. Unless you want to be a sociopathic piece of shit going around the world pooping on people like a walking, talking French bulldog, emotional reasoning is critical. It's how you don't end up being an asshole. So yeah, I don't know if other people feel this way. And I also don't know if everyone is equally sensitive. I don't pretend to be special. In fact, in many ways, just the opposite. But I have had that sense that there's something in the future. And as it gets closer, it gets louder. Now, also, as stated, this could be delusional. This is the thing. When it comes to these types of thoughts, if you want to hold on to your sanity, always accept the fact that if you have no scientific proof, it could be a delusion. I believe in God. And my faith is solid there, so I don't believe it's a delusion. On the other hand, I do get why some people, from their perspective, would say, Dan, your belief in God is a delusion because you don't have scientific proof for it. Well, I don't want to talk about that right now because I really don't need scientific proof for this belief in God. But frankly speaking, for everything else, and maybe this makes me sound like a hypocrite, but for everything else, I do have to step back and question myself. Like, listen, Dan, this is crazy. Anyways, I feel like I'm going to close out this podcast on this note. It's kind of a dark note, but as my battery light starts to blink, I think I need to close this out. It's been a good podcast, right? 42 minutes, at least. And this will probably be my last podcast for the morning, but I hope you guys are having a good day. So far, it's 4 a.m. I hope you're having a great day at 4 a.m. Wherever you are. And I know you listen to this after the fact, so it's probably not 4 a.m. It's probably 10 a.m. or it could be tomorrow. In fact, you could be listening to me next week. If you're listening to me next week, I am so happy that next week got there. Bye.